Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's good, Internet? Welcome to Waypoint's end-of-year celebration. For the next couple of weeks, we are going to be diving into some of our favorite games across something like 10 different podcast episodes. Really quick, I'm just going to break down what the format's going to be in here and how it's going to work. So 2 weeks ago, we sat down and we hammered out our personal top 10 lists. We kind of like basically figured them out, barring some late game, late December changes, yeah. I think. Yeah, yep.
Good video games.
Impossible. So things have been shaking up a little bit there, but we've had time to adjust, and we will continue to adjust probably. We've taken a look at those lists, our top 10 lists, and we've chosen 5-6 games that have shown up on, you know, three or more people's lists. And what we're going to do is we're going to dedicate an entire podcast to each of those games. Think of it as like a Waypoint 101 for our favorite games of 2018, if that makes sense. And so we're going to dig into those in these big group podcasts. But, you know, it's also the case that I think a lot of us have games that maybe only we really loved. There's a lot of games on each of our lists that only show up on our lists. And so we wanted to make sure that those don't get overlooked or that those only appear on the top 10 list on the site. And so what we're also going to do is a set of one-on-one interview podcasts between various members of the site, kind of working through the lists and talking about the games that showed up on certain lists and why they showed up and why people love those games. And we want to make sure we have the ability to celebrate all the stuff that we really did love this year. And all of that will be supported by on-site editorial. It'll have, we'll have some top 10 lists. We'll have trend pieces and pieces about things we saw in the world this year and things that we liked and didn't like in the world of games and everything in between. And that'll be with us, plus some freelancers who we really love to work with. That stuff, though, is going to be on pause right this second, because right now we have something else to do, which is talk about big monsters. I think maybe the first game that took off this year and that captured a lot of our attention and things that we really played a ton of often together was Monster Hunter World. And so I'm here with Natalie Watson.
Hi.
And Patrick Klepek to
Hello.
Talk about our love of killing big monsters.
Well, on the day when you're recording this, on the day of a new Godzilla trailer, so it feels like this is,
yep.
we're in synergy.
Plus DLC announcement for Monster Hunter World, both a Geralt of Rivia DLC. Yeah,
good.
Sure. Great pairing.
The trailer's great.
It's a good, yeah, he does not like portals, is what I understood. And then also an announcement that in late 2019, like fall 2019, we're going to get Iceborne, which is like snowy, icy
it's
stuff.
It's the snow PUBG map, but monsters.
Monsters, yeah. It's the Dino Park.
Those
are going to
be some really big steps that those monsters leave behind.
Oh, yeah.
It's yeah, big footprints. Though.
So let's just set the stage a little bit. Coming into this game, you know, I think it had shown pretty well at events. There was some buzz around it. We knew it looked pretty good. It had kind of looked like a next generation main console Monster Hunter game.
Mm-hmm. Which is something people wanted for a long time and Capcom had continually resisted. Like it's weird now to look at Monster Hunter and be like, oh yeah, like this looks gorgeous and it's on, you know, cutting edge tech and like that's great. It's like not like Monster Hunter has been on portable. I mean, it started on the
PS2. PSPs, right.
But it became popular on the PSP, and then eventually kind of got bought by Nintendo through backroom deals. Like got it on the 3DS, and then had some popularity on the Wii. But like it's largely been a platform in a lot of ways, often if not hindered, but like didn't care about technology. It was kind of just focused on its own thing in its own lane.
And along with that, I think there was also this feeling that it was impenetrable. If you didn't have someone to guide you into Monster Hunter and get you over those initial hurdles, if you weren't closely following a guide, it was really hard to get into the game. And I know this, I'm speaking from experience, not just from kind of popular belief that, like, I tried so many times to try to get into Monster Hunter. I never played a PS2 game. I always wanted to. But then once it was on PSP, once it was on Wii, like, or Wii U, I think, was the one that I tried to play. Like,
I think the Wii U one was the one that a lot of people, including myself, tried to, like, okay, I got a lot of friends that love this series. Like,
I'm
going to
do it.
I was on a kick at Giant Bomb at the time. We're like, I'm going to play games that our community has, like, really wanted us to cover. And rather than just being snide about it, I'm going to, like, actually, like, put in the work. And I remember, like, spending, like, 15 hours trying to play that Wii U Monster Hunter, being like, I think I see what people get. But, like, I wasn't able to cross over. It was just sort of an intellectual understanding of the game as opposed to, like, actually giving my heart over to it.
Natalie, did you have a similar situation where you kind of on the outside of the
series? Yeah, I was definitely, my brother was a huge Monster Hunter fan and tried to get me in on Generations when it was on the 3DS. And so I tried playing Generations by myself and with him like several times and just nothing clicked. Like I felt like I was David and Goliath, but I don't win.
Right.
It was just impenetrable is like the right word for it because it just seemed so over my head. Like if I just didn't have some innate knowledge of this game, then there was going to be no way of me getting in.
Right.
Even with like, you know, playing alongside my brother who had already like sort of internalized the pacing and the feeling and the combat structure of Monster Hunter. So it was hard. And that's why I was so surprised when I was playing it at the beginning of this year.
And you were just like, I like this a lot.
Yeah.
Was it out the gate? Did you immediately respond pretty well to it? Or was there like a moment that brought you on board?
Probably watching y'all stream it. Because I was playing it a little bit on my own. And I was like feeling pretty defeated because you can play that game for a while on your own. But it is really, really scary to be by yourself up against these colossal creatures, especially when, like, their size is just so, like, viscerally felt by you. Like, this is something you wrote a lot about and you guys talked a lot about when you were playing the game. It's just, like, how little you really felt in comparison to these, like, ginormous creatures that were living and breathing and interacting with their own environment just as much as you were trying to interact with them and the environment as well.
Yeah, that's definitely like one of the early moments is like realizing, and I know that this isn't a new thing necessarily in the series, but there were ways in which the extra fidelity, having it on a modern console with all that power, let them do some stuff that like I'd never seen them do in past games, even when I watch gameplay footage. Mm-hmm. Things like a monster dipping itself in the mud to form like a hard rock shell that keeps it safe.
Or even a monster like going after another one. Like you were initially going after one and then like someone else comes along and takes care of it for you or the opposite.
Or interferes
with what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, some of those moments where you know, for me, it's like there's an early moment for me where there's two different types of dragon. I always forget the names of Rathian. Rathian and Rathalos, are those the two of the same type of dragon?
Yeah.
Ended up like fighting each other on top of the first, you know, actually what it was the Anjanath, which is like the T-Rex, the fire T-Rex, fighting a Rathian at the top of the forest stage, the ancient forest. And seeing that fight happen, seeing like the wall break and the floodwater come down, like I knew that stuff was in the game. I'd seen the trailers and stuff, but for whatever reason, it still felt incredible to see that for the first time because it made me feel so small.
Yeah.
And because they were so, there was such a like similitude in terms of convincing me that they were agents in their own
rights. Yeah, that this is an ecosystem is like operating with or without you.
Yes.
And it just felt, it didn't feel, it felt so natural and unscripted. I was dropped into a sort of sandbox with just systems in place with however they might interact may, you know, happen. It was just like so sort of felt so spontaneous.
Right.
And also that yes, this is how this ecosystem would work if I wasn't here, or right. how it would.
They would be fighting. They'd yeah. be like you know, in a pissing match over territory. They'd yeah. be like trying to one up each other.
Yeah.
Patrick, did you have a moment early on that was like, this is when I know I love this game?
No, it was a pretty gradual process. I don't know if I had like a clicking moment necessarily. I'm probably the streams was when like it started connecting for me. Like yeah. I enjoyed playing it by myself, but often that was I was only playing it by myself because that was the option in front of me, as opposed to what I actually wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was getting over. I mean, as streamlined as Monster Hunter World is, like, it gets over a lot of the interface. You know, it's actually similar, I think, arc to Dark Souls in a way in which it's yes. like, okay, yeah. like, what is actually the humps that you want the player to get over to sort of, like, feel a sense of achievement? And then what are the things that are just, like, bad legacy? We're doing this because it's the way we've always done it. And I think yeah. there's actually still miles to go for the Monster yeah. Hunter series. I would love it if Iceborne, rather than like whatever Monster Hunter World 2 is, which is probably going to be something that comes for like the next gen machines. Mm-hmm. But like I'd love for them to take another pass at that stuff. Because even after playing whatever we played, you know, 40 to 60 hours of it, there were still lots of things that felt inscrutable. And I was looking up guides yeah. and I still never quite internalized what I was doing or why certain armor I should be wearing or not
and also wearing. Like, the narrative itself. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you had.
Let's wrap around. Okay. There are some bigger conversations to yeah. have around the narrative and like the it's like brand of weird colonialism, but on the brand of just like
gear
and weaknesses. Like we were streaming the game and had like an Excel spreadsheet we would pull up in
that.
The middle of our streams, and I'm so torn on that stuff because on one hand, I like the inscrutability once the base, like I like getting to a point where it's like I can force my way again, like kind of strong arm my way against a lot of enemies, but against these special ones, like I need to know what their weaknesses are. I need to spec for it. I just wish some of that information was a little clearer in the game itself.
It could be. There's no reason for that stuff to be
right.
hidden on a Reddit thread, because all that is suggesting is, so there should be inscrutability that rewards like careful observation
and preparation
yeah. that is achievable by anyone just playing and observing the game as it is. And then of course there's going to be communities surrounding any game that are going to branch out in different ways. But the information that those communities cull together should be like for high level. That should be for like
the rarest, you know,
right. But post-game like what we're talking content. About was like in order to go or to get through the main story, right? Like to get through the main set of creatures before you're starting to get into just collecting armor and doing variants and things like that. At least for like the base level version of the game that we were playing in January and February. Like there are, if you weren't fully understanding the weaknesses, you were putting yourself at such a disadvantage in fights where like you could brute force your way through the first 20 hours of that game, and then you hit a certain corner, which is probably connected to when you achieve that certain hunter rank where you can start going after like the real armor and some of the more interesting creatures, where you do need to go after those outside sources because they are basically critical to your understanding. And that's the legacy stuff that I think that series needs to shed, that like it got, in a weird way, it managed to paper over a lot of that stuff because it was already so bad and inscrutable. And then when you gave it the big aesthetic upgrade, people were just transfixed. And like it was just a much better game overall. Like by even non, like, you know, we're non fans coming into it, but my friends that have been with the series for forever were, you know, equally bowled over by this one. But I think some of that stuff like gets you to forget like how much more that they could do to, I think, just sort of like elevate the found, like the base level understanding for a wider variety of players.
Yeah, I think that there's so much there. I mean, is this, Patrick, you were saying before we started that, did you buy a second monitor?
So I have a spare monitor.
Okay.
So I have two monitors in my, on my desk, and I've thought about getting a third one that was for Twitter, so that rather than tabbing over to Twitter, I could just turn my eye, because I think actually psychologically it would get me to check it less because it's not
in front
of me. I don't know if that theory is true. I have some suspicions that it might not be, but I'd have to get something that puts it on the wall, blah blah blah. Anyway, I just never gotten around to doing it. And then around the time that we were playing Monster Hunter, and we were hitting a point where I think there was a slight gap between you and me,
yeah.
and we needed to close that. And so I think it was like the playoffs of football. The Bears were terrible. So how far we have come in a year. Uh-huh. And so I would still have football on, and I was like, oh, but I want to be playing Monster Hunter. Right. But I work at my desk all day, all week, and I just don't like to sit there when I play games. And so I dragged out this monitor that doesn't have there's no speakers associated with it. Like, it just takes an input. And so I can't listen to anything unless I was to use headphones on my
controller,
my DualShock. But whatever. Like, if I'm grinding shit out, like, I don't need to hear the sound effects. When I'm just fighting the T-Rex, the Anjanath, for like the 20th time, like, I'm just going through the motions. And so I had this monitor set up while football was on the TV, and I'm just sitting there, like, just grinding through Anjanath, hoping I get an Anjanath Fang Plus.
Right, to get your upgrade. Which, again, is an achievement of this game. Like, that to me is one of the things that
suggests...
Because
I just hate this. We all, like, you go back through my work, I have, talked, like, that is not respecting my time. Monster Hunter World does not respect my time
but it's,
in the ways...
It's one of those games that blows up that entire phrase, right? The entire argument of, like, oh, I hate it when a game doesn't respect my time. Like... I've always kind of chafed at it because sometimes you play a game like this, which does those things, but you're enjoying doing it. You want to keep doing it. There's something in it.
For a while. There was a period, but there was, because there was like this rough tension between, is the combat itself so enjoyable that the repetition is... Like,
doesn't feel like repetition, in fact.
It doesn't feel like repetition. It just feels like I'm going into combat over and over again. Eventually, like, the 13th time, I just wanted the fucking Anjanath Fang Plus to drop.
Yes.
Like, the game should have recognized that, like, yo, he's been doing this for a while. Like, I don't know. Like, some sort of way where I could have fought a variant that just... And I know that, like, hit it in the face more often. Like, I was doing all the fucking things, and the drops just weren't going. And that's where it's like, oh, this is why I constantly harp on this.
Right.
Because there's a fine line between... The repetition and the grind, like, being part of your attraction to it. Because I totally understand there are some people that actually enjoy just the sheer repetitive action because it's sort of like listening to a podcast or white noise. It's just a thing to do that is pleasurable. I tend to not enjoy stuff like that ever. And mostly I was only doing that because I just needed the gear to get on to the next thing because that's the build that I was doing. Or I needed a certain weakness for some fight that I was gearing up for. And... Once I'd done it 15, 20 times, like, okay, yo, this isn't fun anymore. Now I'm just angry at the drops not going my way.
Right.
And that's around the time when I started losing interest in the game because so much of the high level of that game then becomes just fighting variants to get, like, higher level drops. I'm, like, oversimplifying what people do in the high level. But, like, a lot of it is just, like, filling out your collection of armor sets. And, like, I have zero interest in that life. But, like, that 40, 50 hours, like, till I hit... I'm still mad.
That's
we didn't
a lot.
Beat it
of, I know we're like three fights off. I looked it up today. We got through Kushala D'Ora, who is like the steel wind. I almost said
and
Pokemon.
That was a fucking awesome
Pokemon.
Fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't
yeah,
that the one? Is that the one where we were like hitting the ice spikes like to have to fall it?
No, that was Nurgagante, which was also an awesome fight. Like our video of beating Nurgagante
was so good,
so fun, so
it was
good.
Me, you, and Danica, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me, you, and Danica played a lot of that end game because
me and Danica tried to do it on our own.
You did this
and got our. Or was that the one before
that? Was
that?
So the one before it, you and I think, just beat. Then Kushala D'Ora, just you and Danica tried, who was the steel dragon. And
yeah,
the steel
we just got our
one.
Ass. We
and
got
then
some,
all
very,
three of
like
us
one
did
hit
it.
Away.
Yeah, totally. Ugh. And all three of us did it, and we did it, and that was great.
Because Danica's really good at, like, figuring out what you needed to bring.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, like, okay, bring this many, like, traps or
totally.
This type of, like...
Which, again, stuff like, we never would have played or done in other games.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And I mean, fundamentally, multiplayer games was not a thing. Patrick, you and I do a lot of.
Nope.
We did last year with PUBG. This year we did it with Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. Those are exceptions to the rule. Where, like, normally I'm playing games late at night. I'm just kind of, like, zoning out and playing single-player stuff. Or playing multiplayer things, but in a solo mode. And so, like, this bring me in felt great. For my part, I, like you, kind of fell off and felt the repetition of combat eventually. But it was that combat that first brought me in. It's very funny because, like, there is you can watch the fight that convinced me I liked Monster Hunter because it's in the video review that Danielle cut together from my written review. There's a fight against this thing called the Odogaron, which is like this weird, like, muscle-bound, skinless, undead corpse dog. Which is grosser than what I just said. It has like extra claws. It's wild. And so, like, 5 or 6 minutes into this review, I, like, narrate my experience fighting this thing. And there's a specific hit. There's, like, literally, it's also, there's a gif of it in my review. Mm-hmm. There's a specific moment where with the Switch Axe, by the way, Switch Axe for life, where I hit it, and, like, the feeling of connecting with it was, like, sickening, but like, just somehow completely brought me into the moment because of the animation and the kind of the way the animation pauses when you get that hit in, and the feeling of,
like,
weight.
Dunk, 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 yes. Dunk when you're, like, getting those, like, hits in a row.
That stuff all completely brought me in. And what I realized in talking about other games this year, we did Fortnite this year, which is so long ago.
Damn,
it's so hard to even think about
this. I cannot believe that was this year.
I know,
year.
Right? And so we did that this year, and one of my big things with Fortnite was, like, I don't like that. And this is talking about the game 8 months ago. I think the game's changed in that time. Yeah. But when we were playing it, every fight came down to, like, end of the match, either a build fest or a shotgun, like, jumping around in circles fest. Mm-hmm. They've obviously diversified that game in a lot of ways, and in ways I think are really cool. But at the time, my thing was, like, I don't feel like I can tell a fun story about this. So many of my Monster Hunter fights had this narrative element to them. Systems-driven narrative stuff, mm-hmm. where, like, we were down to our last healing
thing. Yeah, it's like absolute desperation, where you are literally, and I think this is, like, something you explicitly outline in your review, where you're literally just, like, I think you say that you're, like, flailing and just desperate to make any connection because it is like when some of the enemies they're moving around so quickly that, and if you have, like, a particular build that is, like, kind of slow and, like, just, like, drawn out with each action, like, just looking for that one connection is, like, so crucial to, like, hopefully get that stun and hopefully get a couple more hits in.
Exactly. Which is not the feeling. I mean, that was another huge thing for it, just, like, the weapon diversity, the feeling that, like, I'm going to learn Charge Blade. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to fucking learn this weapon. I'm going to learn the Gun Lance. Like, I'm just going to learn it. I'm going to figure out what's cool about it. Or I'm not. And then I'm going to go into play with Patrick, who is going to have this hammer that I've never seen before because I've never played with it. And he's going to do this weird spinny hammer dunk. And I'm just going to be like, yo, this is the coolest shit. And so, like, those moments... so much of that goes into the animation, much of that goes into the sound work, so much of that goes into, like, honestly, even the music, the swell when the fight starts to turn and the orchestra suddenly is there and, like, oh, we got this, just push through. I know you only have two more healing
items.
Yeah,
because your cues are only, like, going to be the actual, like, the animations of the creatures themselves and then the music.
Yep.
That's it, because you don't have health bars, you don't have, like... poisoned or, you know, there's no sort of, like, status effect labels on anything. So it's all about inferring and, like, learning and getting to know the creatures themselves and their act, like, their motions and what's typical,
and
what's not typical.
Yeah, totally. And crossing your fingers, right?
So, like, that's when Danica and I brutally lost that fight, the reason it was so heartbreaking was because we didn't die. Mm-hmm. We ran out of time. And so
I
remember being like, what a bullshit design idea, like, putting a time, like, we didn't die, like, we were literally hits away from killing this fucking thing. We just ran out of time and it flies away. But it's one of those, you're so mad when it doesn't go your way, but it's also, like, so critical to why the game works, because in a world where you lift that timer, like, it's a weight that is sitting on you every time you miss is, like, lost time. Like, every time that you, like, instead of going for the easy hit and you, like, do the wind up or you're trying to jump off a wall and you just fucking whiff.
Yeah.
And then it takes sucks. You. And then you, like, it's going to be 2 or 3 minutes until, like, I get an opportunity again unless, like, I take a big risk. Like, every time you curse it, you're not realizing that it's actually blessing you.
Yeah.
Like, It's the whole reason the game, or one of the big contributions to the way the game even operates and has constant tension. And on your weapon point, I remember. So I actually I go back. So I thought I didn't have a moment where things changed. The way things changed was that the weapon that people recommended you play start was the with dual blades.
Dual blades, twin blades, that's what whatever I played.
It is. Twin blades, like it's supposed to be. A lot of people are saying like the closest analog to like, hey, I played character action games.
Play Devil May Cry or whatever.
I play Devil May Cry, like which I play and like a lot of games like that. If you're like Dark Souls, like, you know, there's some analogs there in terms of the combat structure. Like, that's going to be like your easiest way in. And to a certain degree, like, it was. Like, I understood the controls and I guess I got a sense of the flow, but I just found them so boring. Like, yeah. Just. No, like 10 hours in, I'm like,
yeah, Twin Blades was super repetitive. Yeah.
I can't do this anymore. And I've heard from people that actually like swear by the Twin Blades that like as that weapon set goes along, like you get some more variety there that's really interesting. And they like the fact that it's as fast as it is. But I basically like put out a call that was like, I'm losing, like I can see I'm losing this game.
Yeah.
And someone in one of the discords that you and I are in, Austin, I think, said, like, well, try the hammer. Like, it's a really fun, satisfying, like, high difficulty, like, big risk-reward weapon. And I was like, all right. And I just found that to be just like, oh, my. Like, it completely changed the game for me. Like, I just, like, fell in love with the idea of, like, the big wind-up and the big swing. And, like, when you do connect.
It's very Chicago of you. You know?
I just go for the big swing. And, like. When it connects and you like just knock the creature the fuck out and like your whole team is like cheering because then everyone can get in there with their other weapons. Like that's such a cool role to like I found the role that I liked in the group. And that is absolutely the moment that the game crystallized for me. And I think this is probably true for a lot of people where maybe you do switch weapons, but I think it's probably at least for the people that I knew played the game, they eventually settled on sort of a weapon, maybe two, but often just one that they was like, all right, we're going into maybe you play around with three or four different ones, but we're going in for the fight. Like, what is the one that you can be counted on so we know everybody's roles? And that it is so critical to settle on that weapon, which is so different from when I would play other games where I just kind of, even the Souls games, like, I'll just kind of shift around. Like in Bloodborne, I shifted halfway to like that. The sword, short sword, and the Kirk hammer.
The Kirk hammer.
And maybe I'm finding a pattern here, but I'm just saying. But generally, I don't like care that much about like the weapon I end up going with. I'm like okay switching and moving on. But like Monster Hunter is very much like you find a player identity with the weapon that feels right for you.
Totally, I think that's like such a huge part of the breadth of expressivity. You know, I think Dark Souls probably set the stage for a lot of people here. Bloodborne and Dark Souls brought people into this, like, more deliberate animation, like, long animations you're stuck in, combat style, that opened the door for Monster Hunter World to really make a splash this year. And, like, so that's a part of its success. But I think playing it really helped open the door for me in my mind about the breadth of possible types of expressivity and player, the ways in which, as a player, I can be, like, creative in combat in a game like this. And I'm going to keep thinking about that stuff as I go forward. Like, I'm playing Ashen right now. I really, 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 really love Ashen. But it has so little in terms of how many different types of movesets I can do, how, you know, maybe not so little, but, like, I spent most of that game basically going between a club and an axe that both had very similar movesets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe this one does an uppercut and this other one does, like, a dashing hit on its charge attack, but basically their movesets are very similar. What's interesting is, like, also while playing Ashen, I finally hit a point at the end, towards the end, where I got this, like, weird, like, spiked club that does, like, a thrust and then a pull out, and then, like, and does extra damage. And in that moment, when I first did it, I realized I was appraising those weapons in a way similar to the way I was appraising Monster Hunter weapons, even more than Dark Souls weapons, because Dark Souls weapons all have their own unique movesets, pretty much. And so it's one of those things where Monster Hunter has made me more conscious of this desire of mine, whereas when I played Dark Souls games in the past, Bloodborne's maybe a little bit more, was more like I was way more invested in my weapon, because Bloodborne has...
There were fewer.
There are fewer,
right?
Like, and they all Bloodborne are so specific.
Yeah, like whereas in Dark Souls, like, there's
just swords.
There's like, well, there's swords, and there's like 9,000 different swords, right? Like, maybe like there's
the charge special is different, but
yeah, but like, whereas Bloodborne, I think smartly, like, I prefer the Bloodborne model of, like, whittle it down to 12, that are like really iconic and like highly differential so that your weapon becomes part of your identity. And also Dark Souls is different in that over time that series essentially made armor, you could ignore it. Like there's a whole reason, there's a whole subgenre called Fashion Souls, right, which is just where you just embrace the, ignore the stats on any given weapon. Unless you're like going for like heavy, medium, like right, light build, right, right. Like that's about it. Otherwise, just put on what the hell
you
ever makes
you
look
dope. Yeah,
good, because it really doesn't make that in a fight. The difference between like plus five and zero is like not going to make a huge difference in the outcome. And that's actually one of the things that's like interesting about Monster Hunter, is because the fashion part of it is a huge component, but then it's also so deeply built into the repetition aspect, and that's actually where it lost me on that part. And maybe that's just because of the way I play games, the way I cover games, the amount of time I have for any specific game.
Also, January ended and more games started coming out.
Well, that's what killed it for all of us, right? Like, there were so many games that came out at that moment that we got splintered to the winds. What's the game that you had to pick up from there? That, like, because you got pulled off at first.
Was it Far Cry? Was it like?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was
Far Cry for me,
because we decided that you wanted to review it, and it's like I remember like asking several times like, well, we should find time because like we're gonna lose this, and then we're not gonna beat this game. That's
exactly what happened. Thanks, Far Cry.
And it was not worth it for that Far Cry game at all.
I don't know, that review did all right.
Well, I know, but I just mean in like the cosmic was it worth it? It was not worth it.
It was not worth it. 100% was not worth it. I'd love to get back to it. Going back, Natalie, to a point you were starting to raise before about things we'd like to see improved, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I think there's a lot we could talk about on the combat and the usability, the UI, and all that stuff. And I think that stuff will come. But one of the questions I definitely have is, like, will they... They've told a lot of different stories inside of the space of Monster Hunter. They've done the stories that are about conservationism. They've done the stories that are about a local group being overrun by monsters that have been experimented on, or that have been, you know, driven into a wild and angry and dangerous state because of XYZ thing. This was not that story. This story was, you are a group going west on a boat to the new land to get stuff that you think is cool and bring it home. It doubles down on that in weird ways all the way through to the end. I've watched all of the cutscenes of this game, and like it, there are moments at which it's interested in like the human ecological impact, but by and large, it is a game about like going to a new land, learning it, and conquering it, and taking what you can. And like Monster Hunter will always be about taking stuff from monsters to turn into weapons for you to kill more monsters.
Yeah.
But I still think that there's a lot of space there to tell that story better. Does that make
sense? Yeah, or at least interrogate with it, sure, like more, I don't know, more astutely. Like instead of sort of like posing the grand, larger question without directly engaging with it, I think there is space to engage with it somehow. And that's one of the reasons why doing the single, like playing it alone, felt so bad, because it felt so selfish.
Oh,
like it was just me,
right,
like one against this, like this large creature, and all everything I was taking was for myself. And so that's one of the things that, like, because I remember when I was first watching y'all play it, I was like just gutted every time, like watch it. It is so fucking sad to like,
because
see,
they're so lifelike,
and you see, when you see like the first like Rathalos or whatever you fight, and it's just like limping away, and you're like just in like I don't know, it's like it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to like take the life away from these creatures who are just living. Like they're just like, like this is not like the case where you are doing some sort of conservationism, or
there's
doing,
like a little bit of it in terms
it's a little
of
bit
like,
of, like
the,
there's like
thing
some
is, like
been overrun, and it's like corrupting,
right.
So there's like there right. like there are monsters that are like acting out of order than they normally would, and so but
like the end goal isn't like, and now we're good, we saved this place, let's get the fuck out. The end goal is we stop the corrupting influence so that this new hunting ground stabilizes, so we can stay here and keep hunting these things.
Exactly. And that's why moving into playing it with other people made it feel a little bit better, because at least I was sharing in the resources that I got from
I mean, like, literally, my chest at home in Monster Hunter World is filled with shit I will never use.
Yeah.
Because I'm not trying to make anything out of the bat fur or
and
whatever.
And you can't repurpose it any other way.
I think
like,
you can boil it down into
yeah,
really?
You can make those items.
Yeah.
That I think that's basically like
oh, you mean the like the trap, like
There's like that big cauldron.
Yeah, there's the cat, isn't there? Yeah, the cauldron with the cat, right?
Toss some shit in that cauldron. Like, there's like a witch, or I don't fucking remember.
Yeah, whatever.
In my mind, it's a witch. It's probably not a witch, but it could be. There's witches in that game.
There are.
So.
Also, let's remember, like, one of the ways to grind out shit in that game is to just go into an arena exclusively made to just beat the shit out of these creatures. Like, that's.
That's what it's at its most cynical and worst.
Like, those are, for me, like, where you were, like, signing up. It's like, well, I just need this thing. This guide online says the best way to do it is to do this arena. And the arena is just like, yo, we captured a monster out in the wilderness. It was just with its babies. And then we took it here. And then do you want
to
beat...
Pull this lever beat this to shit out of it? Impale it on a dragon spear on, like, a corkscrew.
Can we just, like, we got magic. Can't we just put it to sleep? Like, seems like a more sensible way to, like...
If we're gonna kill this thing.
There are ethical ways to go about this.
Though, in the world of Monster Hunter, the only ethos is, like, you get what you can kill in the arena of life. And so, give it a chance to defend itself.
I hate it.
Me too.
I hate it so much.
There's gotta be a better...
There's gotta be a better way.
Framing. Yeah. They're not gonna do it, though. Like, I have no... Zero. What's less than zero... Like, expectations that, like, we're going to get, like, a better narrative framing around how it treats the creatures. I mean, like, I would love to be surprised. This has been the series from day one, right?
Like, yeah, like I said, I think that
there's... Any budging at all in the last 10
plus years? Yeah, but just because the series has been a series doesn't mean it can't innovate.
I am not suggesting it couldn't change.
I think there's easy ways
for it to change. I'm deeply cynical and see no reason for them... to budge on something that
is a successful formula
is successful and low priority in the grand scheme of things that they probably want to change about the game.
Yeah.
I am not suggesting that it's not actually, like, surprisingly easy to, like, adjust the framing of this to at least, at the very least, acknowledge, like, what's going on a little bit. I just don't...
Listen.
It would shock... I would be happy if, like, Iceborne found a way to, like... Even if you frame it a little bit that, like... Suggest that, like, what these people are doing is maybe wrong, is, like, a step in that direction.
Right. The anime,
or that there's a better way.
The anime is about a boy, a little boy, who rides dragons, who rides monsters, but that's a taboo skill because he's from a monster hunting society, and so he has to, like, that village has to, like, stay away.
So it's just how to train your dragon?
It's how to train your dragon.
That's tight,
but also fighting dragons who've been corrupted by the Dark Blight or whatever.
So, like,
at least he has a homie.
Yeah,
at least like, I don't know.
Yo, let me ride an Anjanath into battle. I'm trying to say, let me have a pet Adagoron in the next full thing where you could capture an this is worse. This is dog fighting. I'm just going to make it... Because this is going to end with me putting my Adagoron...
Oh, you mean it's Pokemon.
It's Pokemon. Right. Exactly. Like, and I get it. Like, I know there are people listening who are like, ugh, why do they have to, like, go so deep on all this shit? Because, like, we're interested in it. Because I think games tell stories, and they do that both through their systems and their narratives. And there's a huge realm of possibility. They made a really good game.
Yeah.
They have... The breadth of what they could make is infinite.
Yeah.
Why not make the version of this that engages with these ideas, especially around, like, colonialism, especially around going to a new world where there are, like, tribal people who are there who, like, you can kind of, like... kowtow into giving you their techniques and shit.
Yeah.
It's a low bar.
It's not a high
saying,
bar.
Right?
Exactly.
Like, it's, to put in the work here, to even just do the tacit acknowledgement of, like, what you're playing with is, it's not a lot.
And
like,
also,
no one's asking.
There are people who are going to hear this and who did hear it and go, like, it's Japan. Japan's never had Native Americans to deal with. That's a different thing. Japanese culture has absolutely has a history of indigenous people being stepped on and pushed out by a dominant class of people from the city. Like, look into the Ainu, look into the, like, history of indigenous cultures around the world. This isn't, like, a Western thing.
And also fucked up practices with,
like
food industries.
100%. 100%. That's what I'm saying. Like, past Monster Hunter games have done different things here.
Yeah.
Past Monster Hunter games have leaned more, and the manga has leaned more into the conservationism stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see them do that in the main series.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because when you make a system and to make a game that so conveniently or so consistently communicates a feeling of life and feeling of, like, oh wow, these are creatures in and of themselves. I think that's especially true with something like Nergigante, who, like, Nurgagante was so well rendered that I didn't feel bad killing Nurgagante. I felt bad killing Odogaron, who like was the creepy corpse dog, because it was like it was hurt. It was like it was like really hurt and sick by the time I was done hitting it with my axe.
Yeah.
Whereas Nurgagante had such a cruelty in his design and the way that he like moved around the world, and the way that he was targeting elder dragons.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah, I want to kill Nurgagante.
But the creature is like rushing back to their nests and like trying to hide from you, and you're just like, I'm coming,
knock, knock, knock.
Like, what if, I mean, even if they had,
so
like, you can imagine, you can even imagine systems.
You tired? Now you tired.
Yeah. Bop. Yeah, they're sleeping, and all of us coming up with bombs and putting them at the head of the fucking animal. Who's gonna hit it? Who's gonna hit it? Hit that shit! Boom! 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 That's terrible.
It's
We're terrible.
Horrible.
People.
It's terrible.
I had a great time. And that is.
What if you? I mean, what if you had systems that like acknowledged like. You could have systems that were related to like your item gathering and your hunting that acknowledge like you were having an impact on the ecosystem.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Like, there are ways that like. This series barely has a fucking narrative to begin with, right? Like, it's really not important. So it's like, I don't even know if that's even the way to go about it. Like, but there are ways to imagine where it's like
over hunting or over.
You keep hunting these Anjanaths. Like, there are ways where like they're not there anymore, and like that means you need to go do a mission so you can just wait for it to cycle through. But like, I think there could be smart and interesting ways in which the game tries to reflect what you're doing in the ecosystem in which. You're related to resources coming in and out, and like ways that maybe you could like completely taint like an area based on what you. I don't know. I just think there are climate change.
Yeah, it's true. Climate change.
Make climate change a mechanic in
the next
Monster Hunter
super short
world
term
two.
Immediate turnaround. Yeah, I think there are ways that you
Icebound. How did it get icy?
Shit. Yo. What if the end of Icebound is you've melted all the ice?
It's Iceborne.
Iceborne.
Whatever.
Listen. Natalie is galaxy brain.
So you want them to take their narrative seriously, and you can't just remember the name of their expansion?
Geralt's there, and he's like,
he was born.
I came through this portal. Why is everything so icy here?
I better heat things up.
Yeah, I wonder if there's
better
any
take
hot witches
a hot
around.
Bath.
It's me, Geralt of Rivia.
I hate it.
I think that's going to be... what's up, Patrick? Huh?
Is he going to put his feet in a hot tub?
Oh, I hope so. Oh, if they don't put Geralt in a fucking hot tub.
Give me the gag.
Immediately.
Give me the gag.
On a fucking ice mountain.
On an ice mountain, just like steaming. Geralt's out sooner than
that.
It would
be.
No, you know what? What they should do is when Geralt wants to prep for that battle, you got to go up to the top and get your food out of that big old pot, right?
Just
put
climb
in that food. Give me that food. Give me that chicken.
Bennett Foddy presents. Geralt in a tub. Just
and he's just
getting over
can
it.
You just see a cut scene of him like and he's just ripping out of a piece of chicken.
Instead of that, just put like bath bombs, which like give you different modifiers, and you just see Geralt like
hell yeah
fizzing it up in the bath.
Just chilling out.
Getting that fucking
shout out to Geralt taking baths, you know? Shout out to taking
baths.
I love baths.
Baths are great.
Underrated.
You know what?
Underrated.
New podcast. Baths are great.
I'm so into that.
You ever go to a hotel and it has a gigantic tub and
that's
you're like,
the shit.
Yo, I can just disappear in here.
That is the shit.
Shout outs.
Calling up room service. Send me four more bottles of that shower gel. I'm making a fucking bubble bath.
Game of the year 2019. Trying to have a good bath with Geralt. Love it. All right. I think we are all the way off topic now. Any final thoughts on Monster Hunter before we wrap up?
I mean, we talked a lot about the narrative stuff that we'd like to see them address in the future. I'm curious for both of you.
Yeah.
Like, so that we're going to get Iceborne, which my guess is going to be like, you know, before the sequel. So like there'll probably be a lot of like overhauls, especially if it's coming next fall. Yeah. Like
there's time.
It seems like it's going to be a huge update.
New maps.
So what would you, what would you, well, I guess even like bigger than that, like what would you like to see them like do to push the series forward in any?
I think one big one is the sort of onboarding stuff that we have to go outside for. I'd love to see in the game directly. I should not have to go to a YouTube channel to look up how to use a charge blade. There should be tutorialization for each weapon in the game that is more than just an arena area where you can go in and fuck around with the weapon. Yeah. There should also be that.
Partner with content creators and just put that shit
put
in
that
the
shit
actual
in
game.
The game directly. Battlefield does that now. Or just have characters in the game be like, all right, this is a charge blade. It's kind of tough to use, but like, let me break it down for you. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah. And like, have a mission designed to get me to use the hammer. Have mm-hmm. a mission that I can, optional mission to let me use the twin blades. Have an optional mission to let me use the gun lance.
My question would be, what about Monster Hunter makes you want that information more in the game rather than looking at like a Souls?
I think the big one for me
because
is...
Because so much of that is extrapolated.
So what I don't want is... I don't necessarily want there to be, like, a YouTube video in the game to where, like, oh, this is how you beat the Anjanath. But I do want there to be missions that encourage... Because the best way for me to learn if I would like a weapon is to use the weapon.
Yeah.
And I did a lot...
But that's the thing with the Souls games is that you the risk you're taking is you just buy it.
Right, like, but this game doesn't have this. Every game, you start with all the weapons.
Right.
And so I just want there to be a mission at the beginning of the game that is like, go fight this low-level enemy...
With a...
And do 6 uppercuts with the switch axe.
That's true, yeah.
You know, like... Make sure you get your katana, your long sword, up to the top level twice. And totally optional, but like it would be a really great way to go from like the starter item to the next level up or something, mm-hmm. and then like gives you just enough of a thing to like mess around with the weapon and see if you like it. Obviously, you mm-hmm. can do that by yourself.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were talking about this on the regular podcast today that the Smash kind of encourages you to jump from character to character.
Yeah.
As it unlocks stuff. And you could do that by yourself. You could just do it. But I would love to have anything that encourages that. Because part of this is just it lowers the barrier of entry a little bit
more. Yeah, without risk. You're not like pouring money.
3 hours or to upgrade a weapon to only learn you don't like it.
Yeah.
Like Patrick did with Twin Blades. So that would be a big one for me.
Yeah.
For sure. And then I think the last one is one that we've not talked about at all. Is like make the multiplayer completely seamless. Do you remember how bullshit some of that multiplayer stuff is that we did not talk about at all? Like, if you're going into a story mission, you have to see the cutscene first before you go fight the boss together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was bad. I don't know if they fixed any of that stuff. Maybe they did, because we've not followed the game since then. But, like, they need to make that stuff drop in, drop out. Let me just, like... be with my bud, see all the cutscenes, ideally integrate both of our characters into cutscenes together because those are fun.
Yeah.
All that stuff would be, it was like so weird that it wasn't
I just
like
remember
that.
Matchmaking in general like was convoluted at the get-go.
We never joined a guild together. It was Patrick, you and I wanted to join Brad from Giant Bomb.
Yeah.
But he's the only one who could send an invite. There was no way that he could deputize someone to send invites.
Well, also you had to play together to get the invite.
Yes.
You couldn't just, you had to be physically, digitally, like your characters around each other to get the invite. And we just never, I never played with Brad. Our just timing
didn't work
just
out.
Didn't
and I imagine if
up.
We had done that, we may have beaten that game. If there had been, I could just jump in with another person in my clan and just blah, blah, blah. Like, I got through all the Destiny 2 stuff at launch because I had that. There's so many games where it's just like having that backbone mm-hmm. allowed me to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big one. Like, I think that fixing some of that stuff, they have such a good base game here mm-hmm. that a lot of those features on the side mm-hmm. would help lift it up to a higher level for me. Mm-hmm. How about you, Patrick? Do you have a wish list?
For like the grind stuff, I'm not a fan of. I don't have like specific recommendations, but I'd like to see. And also, it's so intrinsic to the game and what a lot of people derive pleasure out of that I don't even know if that's a reasonable ask necessarily, because I just don't expect it to change. But I would say like something they could do that doesn't interrupt that flow necessarily is I would like more things to do on those repetitive runs,
right?
Like, so often when you're going off on a quest, there's just not much to do in the area other than, kill like 15 small babies, I guess. Like, kill, the small monsters or however they mm-hmm. characterize it. Like, I would like more interesting variety in the optional side quest content that you're doing on the way to do the repetitive grindy content. I think that would go a long way to alleviating some of my concerns, and also just more transparency on the drops. I just love if there are ways to like hone in a little bit more on specific things, because that's just the problem I ran into. So those are the things that I think about that are manageable for stuff going forward.
Yeah,
totally. Do you have anything?
I think mine have to do with like identifying where resources come from. Like, I remember having a lot of trouble like knowing that I had to find a certain fucking like flying thing, and then like searching throughout an area and being able to locate it, and then just having to load back in to try and see if I can like come across one more easily. So I think having some sort of, and I remember the the system is like, it like shows you that it was like that footprint thing where like you could like follow footprints or whatever to the thing that you're looking for. But in terms of like just wanting to find like basic resources around you, I think that could have been a little bit cleaner. And then the other one for me is really just like, and this is more of a narrative thing, is just engaging with the ecosystem itself more, and just having more of a like mutual relationship there, because it definitely felt very one-sided, in which like I was enacting upon the ecosystem and it would just regenerate itself for me. Like seeing the monsters interact with each other, I think was like a huge like plus, and like was a huge like win for me, but not feeling my impact and just having the game kind of regenerate itself for me, the player, I would have, in a game about like specifically interacting with ecosystems and stuff like that, I would have liked to see it materialize that a little bit more. So that would be a big one for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Also, if the interactions between the creatures could just be expanded
Please.
To be a greater variety of just interactions, because that moment, you know, that you talked about, Austin, was, I think, for a lot of people, like, holy shit, like, that's really cool. And then, you know, 30 hours later, you've seen
that
the same interactions.
Yeah.
And so just expand, like, they have something there.
One of my favorite moments was the
that.
Moments when new monsters would show up into old environments.
Yep.
The bagel goose, the Beetlejuice, whatever the fuck it's called,
yeah.
shows up and
yes.
starts dropping
yes.
bombs in the middle of fights. Like, yo,
it's
what?
Poop
it's
bombs.
Poop bombs dropping. What's going on? More of that.
Where are we dropping, boys?
More poop bombs.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So on that note, that's going to do it for us. As always, thank you, Natalie. Where can people find you on Twitter?
At Natalie Watson.
Patrick, how about you?
At Patrick Klubbeck.
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. You can find Waypoint, twitter.com/Waypoint. Shout out to Kato for doing production. You can find Kato at @A_Kato_Appears. And shout outs to Mello, who's doing some music for us. We're going to either grab a track of his or there might be a custom one. We'll see. You can find out about Mello's music at Mello Makes, M-E-L-L-O Makes on Twitter, or at two mellomakes.bandcamp.com. So shout outs to Mello. We'll be back tomorrow or the next day. I mean, we're going to have just a ton of podcasts going up over the next couple of weeks. So look forward to those. I don't know what our exact schedule is going to be yet in terms of when things are slotting out. It might shift and change based on other people's recording schedules. So no promises on that yet, but there's going to be a ton of stuff in the feed. I hope you enjoy it all. Thank you for listening. Until next time, peace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.